the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
Like we said earlier, we've already spent a few weeks in this letter looking at how after the death and resurrection of Jesus, we have a greater hope. We have a greater priesthood and a greater covenant. If you've missed any of those, I'd really encourage you to get onto the website and to have a look at them, because I found them really helpful in understanding Hebrews as a whole. Tonight, we are turning our attention, though, to a greater sanctuary and how Jesus fulfills and changes how the Jewish practices surrounding the tabernacle work and should be understood. To do that, I'd like to look at Hebrews 9 as a bit of a history lesson. In fact, probably too much in true primary school teacher fashion, much of what I've been thinking about came from a question I found left on my whiteboard after a day out of my classroom. Learning objective: where is God? What a question. And I'd love actually to have been a fly on the wall to know what the six-year-olds had to say about that. I imagine they actually had some wisdom to offer. It's also the question which in many ways is at the heart of this passage. At the beginning of our timeline of this chapter of Hebrews, we start with the Jewish nation's understanding of where God was and how he could be met. Then we move to the most seismic shift in history, the coming of Christ and what that shows us about where and who God is. And finally, we look at where that world-altering change left the recipients of the letter to the Hebrews and where it leaves us. Like many a good history lesson, let's start at the beginning. Verses 1 to 10 go some way to giving us a clear image of what the earthly tabernacle looked like and how it worked. For us in 21st century Exeter, it probably doesn't go far enough. We simply don't have the cultural knowledge and experience that the original readers of this letter did. For them, the details didn't need to be given, so the writer puts it very bluntly, not going to bother. But what is clear and what is key is that the tabernacle was a place that told the story of God and his people. The objects contained within it that we read in verses 2 to 4 are, if you like, a 3D storybook Bible of the first 5 books of the Old Testament. The earthly tabernacle was a physical place built entirely to tell of who God was and what he had done. Not only that, but in many ways, this was the place for the Jewish people where God could be met. It was here that the priests went to carry out their work, and where once a year, the high priest went into the inner room, the most holy place, and gave a blood sacrifice to atone for the sins of the people. At this point in the story, these were people carefully, obediently, reverently following what God had asked of them. But there was a problem. This earthly tabernacle was an image. As verse 5 says, it was an illustration for the present time. Necessary, important, but human and flawed. This was the way until the perfect way was established. Tom Wright, in his book on Hebrews, has a really helpful analogy for how this kind of works, which I'm going to steal and I'm going to slightly paraphrase. Imagine a city with a major renovation at its centre. The work is going on for years. Roads are diverted, routes are changed to make sure that people can still get to where they need to go, regardless of what is now in their way. And people do just that. The drivers in their cars still reach their destination. The diversions aren't meaningless or unnecessary. They're incredibly practical. But then the building's finished, the diversions are taken away, and suddenly all these drivers realise that for years they've been going a very, very long way round, and the direct route is now open. In the same way, the writer to the Hebrews wants to be very clear that the ways of the earthly tabernacle were the correct diversion. They were appointed by God, and through them, verse 8 tells us that the Holy Spirit was showing the way into the most holy place had not yet been disclosed, as long as the first tabernacle was still functioning. These practices were a functioning diversion, waiting for the true route to be ready. But when we read on in the same verse, verse 8, we discover that these gifts and sacrifices being offered were not able to clear the conscience of the worshipper. Whilst the regulations for worship and atonement for sin were right at that time, they were also flawed because they were carried out by broken human beings on behalf of other broken human beings, in a place made by human hands. So they had to be done over and over again. The earthly tabernacle only functioned if you kept going into it and giving the same gifts and the same sacrifices. The Jewish people, and actually us, needed not only a different kind of priest, but also access to a different kind of sanctuary, a new tabernacle, one far beyond what human hands could construct. This comes with a little bit of a go with me, bear with me, but a way that I found helpful when thinking about this is, well, it's a little bit like my garden bench. Hold on. A few months ago in my previous house, I decided during lockdown to fix a garden bench. It had been in our garden since we moved in about a year ago and was looking very sad and very wobbly. So I spent a very few happy hours out there with a paintbrush and paint and hammers and nails. And then I showed my housemate. What's really important is I showed her from the other end of the garden. Don't get too close. And she was right, it looked wonderful, positively gleaming in the sunshine. But the further down the path you walk towards it, the closer you got, the more you notice that actually I did an incredibly poor job. It was a much better colour in the obvious bits, but I'd only bothered with those bits. And if you were brave, foolish, enough to sit on it, you'd have been all too aware it was still incredibly wobbly and in fact now just had poorly placed nails as an addition. A couple of days later, my housemate and I did sit on it and it promptly fell apart. But I am not easily deterred. So I got the hammer and nails back out and I tried again. And then I noticed how bad a job I'd done with the painting. So I patched that up. And on it went. A little bit here today, a little bit there the next day. a patch-up job that I kept having to go back to. What did I need? Well, maybe a new bench or a carpenter. And this is the point where just such a person steps into the story of Hebrews chapter 9. A carpenter and a saviour. After the writer's list of the shortcomings of this earthly tabernacle, come four of the most beautiful words I think I've ever read. But when Christ came. But when Christ came. More simply, but Jesus. Stepping into the broken, messy world of necessary diversions to allow us into the presence of God, comes God himself. Fully human, fully divine, and with him he brings the new true root, the new heavenly tabernacle. Once and for all, the act of atonement for sins is complete. Jesus is the right person, the right carpenter, with the right tools to fix the problem properly. And that is why we read in Matthew's gospel that at the moment of Jesus' death, the curtain in the sanctuary of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. This is the same place that had previously been divided off and accessed once a year. But now, the true route to God has been established, and it's direct, and it's for everyone at any time. Because visually, physically, spiritually, the curtain is torn in two from top to bottom. The old ways that needed a priest to mediate for the people, to bridge, if you like, the gap between God and humanity, and to enter the most holy place, are done away with. And instead, as Nick spoke about last week, a perfect heavenly priest grants us access to the presence of God. The most holy place is no longer reserved for one person once a year. It is now for everyone. We're going to go back to that idea in a little moment, but first, when writing this, I spent a lot of time in this part, and I think it's really important that we don't skip over the cost that it took to establish the greater sanctuary. It sounds almost cliched, but you can't have Easter Sunday with its celebration and its joy without Good Friday and its pain and suffering. The writer of Hebrews spends actually most of this chapter discussing the role that animal and blood sacrifice had played in the first tabernacle. Because again, it was but an image of what was to come. To our ears, the idea of animal or blood sacrifice is strange, maybe even wrong. But to the Jewish audience of this letter, and within Jesus's own community, these ideas were much better understood. It had always taken blood sacrifice to allow the high priest to enter the most holy place. Verse 22 of our passage makes it very clear that in fact, the law requires that nearly everything be cleansed with blood. And without the shedding of blood, there is no forgiveness. The reasons for that in themselves are the subject of plenty of sermons and books in their own right. I'm not going to try and add it in here as a footnote because that wouldn't do it justice. But what is important now is that for the new sanctuary and covenant to begin, a different sacrifice was required here. A messy, painful, agonizing, undeserved death. Jesus on the cross, verse 12 tells us, entered the most holy place once for all by his own blood. It isn't a notional, far off death that buys us our salvation. Sanitized and safe and not to be dwelt on for too long. It's a real experience of torture, to put it bluntly. Born out of love for you, for me, for humanity. As verse 16 puts so simply and in such human terms, a will is not active, it isn't needed until someone has died. This greater sanctuary comes into effect at the moment of Jesus' death. I don't know where you are with God right now, whether you're on solid ground with your faith, shaky ground, or maybe actually you don't feel like you're on any ground at all. But wherever you fall on that spectrum, I think we all have moments of questioning why Jesus would choose a death like that. And here, this chapter is crystal clear. Jesus died this death and established this new tabernacle for two reasons. To do away with sin by sacrificing himself, and so that we may serve the living God. Because that is the curtain moment. At the point of Jesus' death, the curtain tears in two, and in that moment, the dividing line that had existed between people and God, of our sin and distance from him, tears and falls. It is finished. Since the beginning of Genesis, humankind had been at a distance from God, only able to access him largely at certain times and in certain ways. Here, that all changes. Now the most high place is open to me, to you, at any minute of the day, in any place. And it seems particularly apt at the moment to remind ourselves that the most high place is ours and always accessible. Although how we meet together looks different, what we can do is restricted, our access to, our meeting with, our relationship with God are not restricted. Jesus, by his death, has established a greater sanctuary for us to enjoy, so that we may serve the living God. This should be a wonderful, joyful truth in our lives. But I think it also brings with it some tough questions. Given that we have the opportunity to walk through the torn curtain, as it were, held open by Jesus' arms on the cross, and into the most holy place, into God's presence at any moment, are we? Where does entering the most holy place fit in our schedules? As a priority filled in first, or further down the list, squeezed in where there's time? What is our answer to the question posed to the six-year-olds? Where is God? With me now, shaping all that I am and all that I do? Or actually still shut off in a back room, waiting for an occasional visit? Do we use the freedom of the new, greater sanctuary so that we may serve the living God? That's kind of my landing place for tonight. And it's kind of where I'd like to leave us as we move into communion. With those questions, with those thoughts, but also with that joyful truth that the curtain is forever torn into.